scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now. On Sportsnet 960 The Fan, here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, you ready to rock? Let's get it going. It is Wednesday, February 26th. This hour of Flames Talk is underway with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hi, Vix. How we doing?
There's a little bit of energy in this room right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the right kind of energy, but it's energy, that's for sure. Hopefully you're having yourself a wonderful week. And as we hit the midway mark of the week on this Wednesday, we got lots to get to this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Groundworks Downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And the text line's open at 960-960 if you're listening live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Later this hour, Daily Flames Roundtable. But right now, our Wednesday check-in, our midweek musings.
Is that official?
No, not yet. But
okay.
It is our midweek chat with Megan Mickelson. Mick joins us now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Hello, friend. How are you?
I am excellent. I was just doing some of my prep for the game tomorrow by the pool here in Tampa. So I'm doing pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not supposed to say those things because then it just makes us hate you.
Hey, whatever. It's plus 10
there
here.
It is.
We've got wonderful weather.
Hey, that's nice. That's basically nice like Florida weather.
And I know you're rested because you got a nap in today. So, you know what? Everything's coming out Mick. It's not coming up Milhouse. It's coming up Mick on this on this Wednesday. Hey, where does Tuesday rank Tuesday's win over Washington? 3-1 ends up being the final score. Where does that one rank in terms of impressive wins for Calgary this season in your eyes? How would you stack it up against some of the other wins they've picked up or some of the other performances we've seen this year?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be right up there, and mainly the first period, obviously. But, you know, I think and look back to some of the wins that the Flames have had over the course of the season, there's a kind of a few that stick out to me. The one is very early on in the season, kind of feels like forever ago,
one?
The win against the Oilers.
Oh, yeah, the win against
Game one, against the Oilers, and it was on October 13th, a 4-1 win. It was the second half of a back-to-back, and just a very, like, convincing game and impressive because, you know, Battle of Alberta early on in the season, the opponent, all the heavy, you know, elite players over there. So that one was really impressive. And especially because it was that early on in the season where nobody had the Flames pegged to even be in the race for a playoff spot. And they were kind of exceeding all expectations at that point. So that game's up there for me. Another one was their win over the LA Kings on November the 11th. I remember that game. It was just a real dominant performance, a full 60-minute effort from the team, and again, beating one of the top teams in the NHL. And then the other one that I kind of go back to is the 3-0 win against the Florida Panthers on December the 14th. I thought that one was really impressive too, but you know, I'm kind of debating if this is the most impressive win considering the amount of pressure that is on this team right now to win hockey games, where they are in the season, the playoff race, and then obviously the opponent and the Washington Capitals being analytically the best team in the NHL in the 2025 calendar year. So, you know, coming out of the break, I didn't have the best game against San Jose. And, you know, if I'm being honest, the first game of the road trip, Dan Vladar's in net, nothing against Dan Vladar. He hadn't played in a while, so wasn't quite sure what to expect there. And just from the entire team in general, coming out of a game against the Sharks where they weren't at their best and their pace wasn't where it needed to be to beat what is the best team or one of the best teams in the league right now. But the way they just came flying out of the gates found some goals early on, which was important. But what I also liked was two things. From a defensive standpoint, their just the courageousness they showed in their shot blocking, blocked 30 shots. I loved how the defensemen, obviously their willingness to block shots, but the job that they did net front in clearing traffic. That's something that, you know, hasn't always been there over the course of the season, but, you know, they did a fantastic job of that. And those two things really helped to keep Washington off the board. And then when the Capitals scored to make it 2-1, just the response and being able to find a goal in that situation at that point in the game to extend the lead 3-1. Also, I mean, offense has been so hard to come by for this team, but, you know, in such an important game at a crucial time in a game, we're able to find that. So, you know, I'm debating right now if we put that one right at number one.
For me, it's top three for sure. And the other two that I've kind of identified in going through this little exercise was the season opener in Van, where you're down 5-1. Rooney gets hurt, and it looked like the Calgary Flames were so disjointed through the first 20 minutes of that game, and then they storm back and win 6-5. And the other one that I kind of identified as well was that 3-0 win against the Florida Panthers in mid-December as well. Shout out for Dustin Wolf, who had come off of three, I think, subpar starts against the defending Stanley Cup champions. But in terms of the most unexpected, I think that this Washington game goes number one. As you mentioned, Mick, kicking off a road trip, you've got your what's become your clear backup goalie with Wolf at that point at starting 20 of 26 games. Vladar hadn't started in 25-ish days, and you're playing the team that's number one in the NHL, had an 8-game point streak, had scored 15 goals in two games coming out of the Four Nations break, and had earned at least a point in 16 straight home games. For you to come out and punch some square in the face in the opening 20 minutes of that game and really set the tone, that wasn't something that was on my radar. I really wasn't expecting the performance that we saw out of the Calgary Flames to kick off one hell of a road trip. Dominating first period, and to me, certainly a top three win this season, and maybe the most unexpected from my perspective.
Probably just based on the time of the season, I think probably the most impressive one. Like, because now we're into the final stages of the third quarter of the season. The fourth quarter is right around the corner. Like, we're into the stretch drive. And, you know, I know that some teams have had trouble ramping their games up after the Four Nations break, but Washington hasn't been one of those teams. Like, Washington's been putting pucks in nets at will prior to Tuesday night, where they only scored the one goal. And so what I liked about it, because honestly, if you were to just look at that game in a bubble and not know anything about the context, the playoff chase, the circumstances, you know, you probably come away and say, oh, yeah, you know what, the Flames, they kind of just had to survive and hung on. They were defending way too much in the third period and second period. But then you add the important things like context and like where we are in the season and all those types of things. And I just thought for a team that is scratching and clawing to try to make the playoffs, they scratched and clawed to win a hockey game against a team well above them in the standings. And to me, that makes it the most kind of impressive win of the season for me. That's why I would put it right at number one. The time of the year, the way they had to go about it, the commitment they showed. Like, every once in a while, Mick, you need to win a game where your goalie steals it. We saw that in Winnipeg a number of weeks ago when Dustin Wolf was spectacular in that win over the Jets. Or you know what? Sometimes against an offensive juggernaut like the Washington Capitals are right now and have been for a good chunk of the season, sometimes you have to win a game where you spend like two periods almost exclusively in your own end. And you have to still play a smart, intelligent hockey game while you're doing that. And I thought they did. Blocking 30 shots a game is not a long-term recipe for success. We all know that. But on a one-night basis, yeah, it can win you a hockey game. And when you know that, hey, the Caps are feeling it, they're starting to sling it around,
feels like we're in our own. I don't know if Rasmus Andersson and Kevin Ball saw the offensive side of the ice in the final 40 minutes of play, and yet they did a really good job of being in their own zone and defending intelligently. Mick, sometimes you got to win a game like that. And I thought that the Flames did a great job defending in front of their goalie who hadn't started in 22 days or 23 days or whatever it was. Dan Vladar did a great job. We'll talk about him in just a second, but I thought, just based on all the circumstances and how we've seen some games unravel this year when the other team gets one goal and the standings and how it's kicking off a road trip, all those types of things, I'd put it at number one.
Yeah, and it, to me, I think what sets it above the others is just the amount of, you know, stress and pressure in that game, in all of their games right now, and to have the ability to come out and to perform under that amount of stress and pressure where, you know, all of the eyeballs are on you. And, you know, I think that that's what really sets it above for me. But the other thing is finding a way to win games in different ways. And they're going to have to do that. Mm-hmm. Teams that are successful in this league, you have to find ways to do that because every opponent is different. Their strengths are different. And I do think that the coaching staff has done a fantastic job of, and you hear the players talk, of preparing them for different opponents. I know Morgan Frost said that was one of the biggest differences for them coming over from the Philadelphia Flyers, and just how much Ryan Huska and the coaching staff, the work that they do on other teams, the deep dive, and then it's, you know, strategic in terms of how they're going to counter the way that other teams play. And to me, it was very obvious that was done for the Washington Capitals. But then the other part of that is having the players execute it. So I think the game plan was laid out really well. And then the players went out and executed. Yeah, it was, you know, it got a little bit sloppy second and third period, but that's to be expected against a team like the Washington Capitals. So yeah, I think that it was impressive on a number of different levels. And hey, they're going to have to continue to find ways to win games like that down the stretch. I think that that's no secret at all.
Vix, maybe we'll start with you on this next one. Oh, and I only say that because you were so yep. adamantly against Dan Vladar.
I'll take my L.
But you were pretty adamantly against Dan Vladar getting that start on Tuesday night. He goes in there, makes 26 of 27. That's now two straight wins for him, a 935 and a 963 save percentage in those two wins, granted 23 days apart. But the message going into the game was both guys have got to play, and we don't want one guy to be off for too long so that when he gets back in, it's going to be a really rusty effort. And so they want to keep both guys fresh. And the way that you can do that is with both guys being able to give you solid performances, quality starts. And I think we're all in agreement that Vladar did that on Tuesday night in Washington. So, Vix, you take this one first.
Yeah.
Like, how important was it that even if you didn't agree with the decision to go Vladar, the reasoning was wanted to make sure that both goalies stay fresh, also wanted to not be in a situation where you're driving Dustin Wolf into the ground, and Vladar goes out there and gives him a quality start. What was the importance of that?
Well, as you said, you do need two goalies going down the stretch here, and while Ryan Huska had said as recently as 4 days ago that he'd be willing to start Dustin Wolf 15 straight if it meant getting 30 points, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's willing to ride whatever goalie he has to in order to get the results that this team needs in order to qualify for the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's now Dan Vladar's third of four starts north of 920 save percentage as well. So it's not just the two recent games. It's sample size over the four. There was a little bit of an iffy start there, but three of the past four being north of 920 is progress that you need out of a goaltender, whether he's going to get five of the next 25 starts or if he's going to get 10 of the next 25. However it happens to shake out, you need to be able to, just because you're playing, if we want to deem Vladar the backup, just because the backup's in, it doesn't mean that that's conceding a defeat. You need a goalie that's able to spot start the way that Dan Vladar can at times throughout his Flames career to come in and give reliable goaltending. And it's been up and down this season from my perspective. And yeah, I think if Dustin Wolf starts that game against the Capitals, the Flames still win 3-1. If you do a direct sub out, it's still a Calgary Flames win. But the fact that you're able to give Dustin Wolf a little bit longer of a break, and you're able to get Dan Vladar in because you know you're going to see him again on this road trip, it certainly benefits the Flames. And so, yeah, I'm willing to admit I did not like the idea of starting Vladar in that game. You're kicking off your most important road trip of the season against the hottest team in the NHL, and you're going with what has historically been over the last, you know, quarter of the season or half of the season, your backup goalie. But it goes to show what I know about goaltending, which is nothing because it's such a voodoo position. And I'll be the first to admit that it worked out for the Flames. I didn't expect it 24 hours ago to work for the Flames, but then he turns in that performance. And the team around him played really well as well. I don't think that he stole that game by any means, but he certainly gave Calgary the means to go out and win it. And that's very important to be able to trust your second guy to go out and do that.
Well, I'm married to a goaltender, so or a former goaltender. So
no, once a goaltender, once a goaltender, always a goaltender.
Inside track.
That's true. That's true.
I've met Scott.
That
that's
I'm
a goaltender
by any means. Yeah. He is. Bless his heart. but no, you know, yeah. Like I said, not an expert either, but have played with, you know, a lot of elite goaltenders. And, you know, over the course of the season, like, I don't know, to me, I was okay with Dan Vladar starting. I think that, you know, the conversations I've had with him and hearing him talk in the media, hearing what Ryan Huska has said about him, you know, he wants more starts. And this guy, he's a competitor. Like, he wants to be playing. And coming into this season, like, we can't forget that it was going to be a battle for the number one job. And there's no way that you're an NHL goaltender and you are happy with the fact that, you know, as good of a teammate as he is and as supportive as he has been, that he, you know, on the inside, you still are that competitor. You still want to be playing games. And so when you get opportunities like the one Dan Vladar got yesterday, I mean, I felt like he was really, really up to the task. And I chatted with him after morning skate and he was like, I'm like, you know, you're going to have a good game. Like, how you feeling? He's like, let's go, let's do this. And so he was dialed in and he was ready to go. And I mean, I give him a ton of credit for coming in and playing that way. And it just really shows that he is a very serviceable goaltender. He's a good goalie. And I think that people forget that sometimes with some of the games that he has played this season that haven't been his best. But he's shown lately that he's a guy who can come in and he can, you know, play well enough that it helps the team beat the best team in the league or one of the best teams in the league. But I do think, you know, and one of the reasons why I know, Pat, we chatted about this on the pregame show yesterday. One of the reasons why I wasn't surprised with the fact that he was starting when we walked into morning skate yesterday and he was in the starter's net. And I was like, oh, at first, you know, a little bit surprised like everyone. And then thought about it. I thought going into the break, Dustin Wolf looked tired. He was getting beat clean on shots. We hadn't seen that in a while. The entire team looked tired, obviously. But I just think that, you know, with the games that they have left, they want to have whoever is in net to be fresh and to be able to, if they have to, steal hockey games. So for Dustin Wolf to, and you know, over the course of this 6-game road trip, you know, I don't think he was going to play 5 of the 6 games. So the way that they have it laid out, it totally makes sense for Dan Vladar to have started that game. Dustin Wolf starts against the Lightning. Dustin Wolf starts again against Florida. Dan Vladar once again gets the second half of a back-to-back against the Carolina Hurricanes, and then Wolf takes the last two of the trip against the Philadelphia Flyers and the Dallas Stars. So I think that, you know, strategically in the way that you're laying out a plan, not just for this road trip of the way they're playing the two guys, but I think, you know, moving forward in making sure that they're getting their rest and they're fresh when they're playing, especially Dustin Wolf, that, you know, I thought it was a really smart move, but also shows the confidence that the coaching staff has in Dan Vladar. And I think that it should give the team confidence as well in knowing that no matter who's in the net, they can get the job done.
Well, and can I just say that, first of all, I think that if Dan doesn't win his last start, like not the game in Washington, but the game in Seattle,
if he has another night where it's not such a great outing, and now we're talking about this stretch of not picking up wins extending into the Four Nations break, I don't know if they make the call they made against the Capitals, but he won his last game and looked good in Seattle and was a part of the Flames finding a way to win that game. Obviously made that huge stop as time was expiring to preserve the 3-2 win. So I think that up the confidence and allowed the coaching staff and Craig Conroy and management to say, let's go again and let's put him in against Washington in this game. And here's the other thing, Mick, and I'd be curious as to your thoughts on this. Vic's talked about, okay, there's 25 games to go. Is it 20-5 or 15-10? You know, if the coaching staff has the confidence and if Dan Vladar is giving the coaching staff the confidence so that he's starting a whole lot more than you might have thought coming out of this break, and you know, maybe it is, instead of like we had this conversation, we're like, okay, going into the final 27, I think Wes and I were like, well, you could see Dustin Wolf start up to 22 of those 27. Well, what if it doesn't have to be that lopsided? Like, that would that not be the ideal if Vladar is giving them quality starts too? Nobody is suggesting that Wolf shouldn't start more. But if you don't have to bury Dustin Wolf, and if you don't have to drive him into the ground with start after start after start, that to me does feel like ultimately the ideal. And maybe I'm off on that. I'm just curious as to where you'd be on that.
Well, I think that their situation right now is way too far up in the air to say, you know, there's 25 games left and, you know, Dustin Wolf should get X starts and Vladar should get Y starts. I think that it's going to be highly dependent on, you know, whether they stay in this playoff race or whether they kind of fall out of it. So, you know, I think that that's the biggest determining factor. Is I don't think that it's, you know, the ink's not on the wall in terms of, you know, this is a solid plan. They probably, well, they for sure have, you know, kind of a plan laid out of this is what they would like it to look like for the starts, and I'm sure that they have all 25 remaining games and saying, you know, who's going to start where and what the plan is, but that it's going to be also dependent on who's playing well. You know, if one of the goalies gets a shutout, then we know that they're going back for the next one. That's something Ryan Huska has been very clear about. But also, you know, if they've dropped out of it, then does Dan Vladar get more starts?
Right.
I also like. I don't know. I also think about the trade deadline, and it's going to depend on what their plan is for Dan Vladar. And I think that that's an interesting piece. Like, are they looking to make moves at that point? Are they looking to move him at that point? And, you know, are they trying to increase his trade value? Because after, you know, you beat the Washington Capitals and then you beat the Carolina Hurricanes on the second half of a back-to-back, well, you're a much more valuable trade piece than you would have been, you know, kind of before Christmas time, say. So I think that that's kind of an extra wrinkle to it as well. But it is so dependent on where the team is literally in the next couple of games. Like, if you drop three straight, then things could look a lot different in terms of what your plan for goaltending is, not just the rest of this season, but moving forward as well.
I'm going to provide the quote that I referenced earlier today and that I referenced on Tuesday on Flames Talk from Ryan Huska, courtesy Eric Francis. We're at a point where we need to find a way to get as many points as we can. If that means we're going to play Dustin 15 in a row because he's having success, so be it. That's where the quote ends. I'm more than comfortable suggesting that if Ryan Huska... Hold on. I'm still going.
That won't happen.
No, but I'm saying...
That won't happen.
If it turns out Dan Vladar is going to start 15 in a row because he keeps going on a winning streak, the Flames have no problem going that direction as well. Having said all that, you're talking about a goalie this year that has a 913 save percentage in Wolf versus Vladar, who has an 891 and whose career average is 893. I'm more confident in suggesting that Vladar's starts are dependent on Wolf more than the vice versa. Because if you get Dustin Wolf rolling, I have no problem suggesting that he's going to get the bulk of the starts. But if he starts to falter like we saw heading into the Four Nations break, that's when you're going to need to rely on Vladar a lot more.
The difference is, too, that Dustin Wolf is, he's the future of your organization or a massive piece of it.
For sure.
I don't think the same can be said for Dan Vladar. So, you know, there's a difference Absolutely. In how they deploy the two of them just based on that.
Yeah. It's Megan Mickelson, midweek with Mick on this Wednesday. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you as well. Just because I know you love to talk about Kevin Ball's stick checks, we'll give you last word. You know what? We can't bring you on and not talk to a fellow defender about another defender. Kevin Ball missed 9 games and was out for about a month when you factor in the Four Nations break as well. What'd you make of Ball getting back in and playing against Washington on Tuesday night?
Well, now that you say that, I'm going to go look and see where he is in stick checks. Oh, no, he's dropped to tied for 4th in the NHL.
Well, that's disgusting.
For stick checks now. still, the leader is Keandre Miller with 116. Gavrikov has, Jacob Slavin both have 111, and then Kevin Ball and Oliver Ekman-Larsson are both sitting at 110. But Kevin Ball has way less games played than the rest of them. But, I mean, for me, like, and I said this last week when I was on with you and Wes, that I think he is their best defender. And just the way, not their best defenseman, their best defender in the way that he plays a really complete, solid, simple shutdown game. Has he had some off games? Yes. Does every player? Yes. But I think that, you know, the way that he played in the game last night, it showed not just the value that he brings in balancing out the pairs and shutting down other teams' top lines. But also, you know, what really stood out to me was how much he elevated the game of Rasmus Anderson. Like those two, I thought that, you know, yes, they defended quite a bit and took on some water, but you look at the guys that they were out there against, and you sure can't blame them. So, I just thought that he was, looking at the fact that he hadn't played in so long and coming in and playing, a shutdown role against one of the best teams in the NHL, I thought that it was, really impressive the way that he played. And he also played 23 minutes in that hockey game as well. For your first game back, that's not too shabby, but it just speaks to, his importance on this team. And, it was just so evident when he was out of the lineup how much he was missed. And, it's a darn good thing that they have him back, not just for his sake, but for that of Rasmus Anderson as well.
For sure. Good stuff. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, and we'll talk to you on pregame on Thursday. It's another lovely midweek with Mick. Thank you, pal.
All right, thanks, guys.
We're still waiting to find a name for it, but that'll work for today. Megan Mickelson, color voice of the Calgary Flames, joining us to kick off this hour on Flames Talk. Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and Mick joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Wednesday edition now of the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. So, gents, I thought Ilya Solovyov had a really, really strong game. I thought he and Braden Pahal played a whale of a hockey game on Tuesday in that 3-1 win over Washington. And that's now 3 games in a row with Solovyov in the lineup. The first 2 games, Flames were still shorthanded on the blue line, so he was playing with Rasmus Anderson. In this game, Kevin Ball comes back, but Solovyov stays in, drops back to play on the third pairing with Pahal, and Jake Bean became the healthy scratch along with Daniil Miramanov on Tuesday. I guess, and it's still only been 3 games, and I kind of want to, Vix, you weren't here for it, but last week, Wes, Wilsey, and I had the conversation
conversation about Soloviev, and we were talking about, you know, where Soloviev might fit and comparing him to Joel Hanley and all that type of stuff. So I guess it kind of harkens back to that conversation, Wilsey, when I asked this, but how do we feel now that we've seen a few games from Soloviev, of him at least being a part of a D rotation? And maybe it's Bean who's a part of it. Maybe Hanley becomes a part of it at times as well, depending on the opponent. And it's more about Soloviev and what we've seen from him. But how do we feel about him potentially being part of a D rotation now?
Well, I like how you phrase it, Pat. I do think that there could be a rotation depending on how guys are performing and depending on the Flames' opponent. So, for example, in last night's game against the Capitals, and they are a big, heavy team, Ryan Huska told us the reason that they decided to insert Ilya Soloviev into the lineup was because, you know, he's a big, heavy guy himself. So I think against teams like the Capitals that are bigger and heavier, you could see Soloviev in the lineup. Well, what's interesting, though, is when we talked about him last week, you know, I think we all agreed, or maybe I should say we all assumed, that if there was going to be a rotation, it could be Joel Hanley, who is the odd man out. And maybe that ends up being the case. But last night it was Jake Bean. But I could see Bean being back in there against the Lightning tomorrow. Now, the Lightning are a quicker team. They've got a lot of skill. And, you know, Bean is a guy who isn't big and heavy, but has a little bit different skill set, does a really good job, you know, skating the puck out of his zone, making a good first pass. So, and I could see him being a good fit in a game against a team like the Lightning. But, you know, Soloviev, with the way he's played, and I think he's played well, I think he has earned an opportunity to potentially be in a rotation as the Flames' number six defenseman, whether that be on a pairing with Braden DePaul, or maybe they move him up and I'm playing him on a pairing with Mackenzie Weegar if Hanley becomes part of the rotation. But it's a good option to have if you're Ryan Huska, because depending on the matchup, I think you've got different guys who bring different things to the table. So Soloviev has acquitted himself well. He looks like an NHL defenseman. It's a small sample size, I know, but so far so good. And you know, the fact that the Flames have guys back there who can give opponents a little bit different look, I think is a really good thing at this stage of the season.
Absolutely. You need that internal competition, whether it's a guy coming up from the minors and pushing some guys that have been on the roster all season long, or just simply fighting for ice time or slotting. And Soloviev has done just that. If he keeps up his level of play, I'm all for him joining in on this rotation. And as he's played, again, with Rasmus Anderson or with Braden Bahal, I've really liked what we've seen out of him so far in a couple of different roles. Now, if he falls off, you're certainly not going to hesitate to make a change. And that's, again, where that rotation sort of comes into play, where you have different defensemen with different skill sets. So you can, as you mentioned, Wilsey, tailor what your back end looks like based on what you're expecting out of your opposition. But in Soloviev in particular, like, give me his low event hockey all day. That's a win. When you're not noticing him out on the ice, that's a good thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing, because defensemen of his ilk, typically when you're noticing them, is because they did something wrong, not necessarily because they took the puck 180 feet and scored a goal. That's not the game plan. That's not the skill set. That's not what you're asking of him. But Soloviev, through these auditions, in these different sort of scenarios, whether it's in a top pairing role or a bottom pairing role, he's acquitted himself quite well. And to be perfectly honest, this is kind of the Soloviev I expected coming out of camp. And he had to be patient with Calgary having so many defensemen that were available to them. He had to bide his time until getting the opportunity. And now I think he's making the most of it.
You know what I love is that, you know, Wilsey, you talk about, hey, maybe you bring Bean back in against Tampa Bay. And you know, now all of a sudden, maybe you can start to make lineup decisions based on who your opposition is. And that hasn't always been their ability. And part of that more recently has been because they have been injured, because Ball was out and that really stretched them thin. But yeah, I think if you, because Miramanov hasn't been able to be that guy, they've wanted to get him in, but he's just been too up and down, too inconsistent, and hasn't been a guy that you've been able, as the Flames, to rely on. And the same was true with Tyson Barrie. And now if Soloviev can continue to play the way that he has, and I think two of the three games he's been really strong, I think he and Raz struggled a little bit in the San Jose game on Sunday, but he bounced back really nicely on the road against Washington. I just feel like it gives you an option that maybe you can make lineup decisions, not just based on, oh man, that guy wasn't very good last
last night. Now we just got to try somebody else. And maybe you're making more strategic decisions about, hey, this team's a little bit heavier, and we really think Soloviev and Pahal as a pairing matches up well because of this matchup. But again, maybe because it's Tampa and the way that they freewheel, they like to skate, maybe Bean's a better fit with Pahal in that game. And so that is maybe the biggest positive of it if this can continue. And I hope that it does for Soloviev. And the last thing I'd say before I throw it back to you, Wilsey, is that if it doesn't work with Soloviev and you know, maybe there's some steps back taken in the next number of games here, I don't think the Flames will hesitate to do the same thing and try the same thing with a guy like Kuznetsov. But for now, it's Soloviev's opportunity. And I think so far he's done a nice job of kind of working himself into the conversation, which is, you know, potentially a nice option for the Flames to have down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you don't want to lose a top pairing or at least top four defenseman like Kevin Ball for 9 games like the Flames did. But what that did in hindsight was open the door for Ilya Soloviev to get a little bit longer look. And, you know, big picture, that could be a really good thing for the Flames because, you know, we've talked about this for years and years, guys. Playoff teams have to have depth on defense. Brad Treleving used to talk about having 9 or 10 NHL defensemen available come the Stanley Cup playoffs and how important that is because it becomes a battle of attrition. And the Flames, they've got a lot of depth on defense in the organization now, which is super exciting. And I'm talking about guys at the NHL level, at the AHL level. And of course, you've got players like Zane Parekh, who hopefully sometime soon will be knocking on or knocking down the door and, you know, trying to play a role for this team. But Ilya Soloviev has looked like an NHL player. And, you know, we've got a small sample size to work with when it comes to Soloviev, but I would say so far, so good. And you talked about him playing low event hockey, Aaron. The other guy who plays low event hockey is Joel Hanley. And I think there's something to be said about that. You know, I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've noticed Joel Hanley in a bad way this year. You don't always notice him in a good way because he's not a guy who's going to give you a lot offensively, but he just goes out there and quietly does his job game in, game out. He hardly ever makes a mistake. And when you're playing with a guy who is going to take some more risks, like Mackenzie Weegar, I think having a guy who's steady Eddie like Joel Hanley paired with him makes a lot of sense. And Braden Pahal, you know, he's a fairly low event player. Again, he's not going to give you a ton offensively, but he can be higher event in the sense that, you know, he can play really physically and throw huge body checks. So you notice him for those things. But, you know, Soloviev has done a good job just kind of blending in. And you know, it's interesting. I didn't expect Bean to become part of the rotation, and maybe it won't be a real rotation moving forward, but if I'm not mistaken, Jake Bean had played in 30 of 31 games prior to last night. So he was a regular. Like, there was no rotation, but the fact that Soloviev has done enough in practices and in games, hey, did enough with the Wranglers to get called up by the Flames and to earn that opportunity, I think it says a lot about him. But you know, the Flames are healthy right now. They've got 8 defensemen, and I didn't necessarily see this coming either, but for me, the clear number 8 right now is Daniil Merimanov because he doesn't play low event hockey, which I think you can live with if he's giving you more offensively, but there hasn't been enough there offensively. There have been some mistakes defensively. So you know, I think he's dropped down to number 8 on the depth chart. And I think now it becomes probably a battle to be that number 6 guy, whether that includes 2 guys in Jake Bean and Ilya Soloviev or maybe Joel Hanley at some point in time. But I would say it's a good problem to have if you're the Flames.
So Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Wednesday. Gents, the last time the Flames played the Tampa Bay Lightning was about, quick math, that'd be about a month and a half, 2.5 months ago, when they lost 8-3 on December 12th to the Tampa Bay Lightning at the Scotiabank Saddledome. It was a rotten game. Poor Dan Vladar was left in for all 8 of those goals. And Nikita Kucherov had one of the best single-game performances we've seen with our own 2 eyes. That was 2.5 months ago, though, and the Flames are coming off a really impressive win over Washington on Tuesday night. So how do the Flames have success against this Lightning team that's rolling right now, against a Lightning team that still has eyes on going deep in the Stanley Cup playoffs? What's going to be key against Tampa Bay on Thursday?
stay out of the damn penalty box. I mean,
that would help.
We saw it last night. Alex Ovechkin scores from his office. And I would say Nikita Kucherov's got an office, maybe two offices, when the Lightning are on the power play. And he was absolutely lethal in that game. So first and foremost for me, play as much five-on-five hockey as you can. I think that gives you the best chance to win. And guys, I don't know if you saw it the same way I did. The first period the Flames played on the road in Washington against the Eastern Conference leading Capitals last night, I'm not sure they played a better first period. I'm not sure they played a better period than that all season long. Now, we're talking about a game against the Capitals team that scored 15 goals in their first two games coming out of the Four Nations break. They had scored four more goals in seven consecutive contests. And the Flames start their backup goaltender, Dan Vladar, and everybody thinks that's going to lead to impending doom. And the Flames, and I'm not taking anything away from Vladar because I thought he was really good in last night's game, but I thought the Flames were great, really great in front of him in the first period. Yeah, they took on a lot of water in the second period. I thought they got kind of back to their game with the Capitals pushing hard in the third period. But if they can play for close to 60 minutes against the Lightning tomorrow night, like they did in the first period and for parts of the third period against the Capitals last night, that's going to give them a chance to win the hockey game. You know, Ryan Husk always talks about playing the right way. Well, for me, the Flames played the right way for pretty much an entire 20 minutes to get last night's hockey game going. If they can do that for close to 60 against the Lightning tomorrow, I like their chances to start this trip 2-0.
I might be a cliche machine here, so bear with me. But
I'm going to start taking note here. Let's
go. Oh, good. You got to get to your game, and you got to get to it early. They started on time against the Washington Capitals in what we agree, Pat and I, in talking with Megan Mickelson, agreed as a top three sort of impressive win on the season, all things considered. You should consider all the circumstances.
Yeah.
You played the perfect road period against the Capitals to kick off that game. If you can set the tone that way, you're going to give yourself a chance every night. And we know the Flames have to play a particular way in order to have success, particularly against high-octane teams, that tight checking game being above pucks, so on and so forth. If you can come out with that first 20-minute effort the same way you did against the Capitals, you're going to set the table for yourself really nicely over the course of the final 40 minutes.
I only counted two.
I think there was
you missed pucks in deep.
Yeah, I didn't hear.
Did I say stay above pucks?
You did. Yeah, okay. A couple times.
So that's close.
Is that a cliche, though?
Feels like it at this point.
Like you said start on time. You said
get to your game.
I mean, there was like a couple like borderline cliches, but like not any. You didn't say 60 minutes.
Play a full 60 minutes.
Yeah, didn't say
pucks.
Really,
indeed.
I kind of only said play 20 minutes, to be honest with you, but that would set the tone. I had set the tone.
I don't know if that's a cliche.
That's a cliche now.
That's a good way of
yeah.
Good way of phrasing.
Anyways, I digress. On to you.
Guys, I think that we might be talking a very similar blueprint to what they needed to do against Washington. I'm not saying like the exact same script, but similar blueprint in this way. When the Flames carry the balance of the play, they've got to be opportunistic like they were on Tuesday. The Flames carried the balance of the play in the first period and specifically in the back half of the first period. And what did they do in the back half of the first period? Scored not once but twice. They got the kind of the nice bounce they worked for, and Pospisil got the goal that made it. I don't know why. I think Washington's still angry. How can you kick a puck that you don't know is coming from?
Well, end off your shin.
Yeah, like, no, of course that wasn't a kicked-in goal. So Pospisil scores that one. Yeah, it's a lucky bounce, but you worked for it. It was a great fourth-line shift. They make it 1-0. And then a great heads-up play by Kevin Paul, and Matt Coronato rips it past Logan Thompson to make it 2-0. And so the Flames made hay when they were playing well. So that they need to do that. It doesn't have to be in the first period. Maybe it's not until the second period where they have a stretch a play where they carry it, but you got to be opportunistic when it happens, because you know Tampa Bay is going to be a team that generates themselves. We just know that. And so the other thing that I think is going to be important, because Tampa Bay is a top 6-7 team in terms of generating quality opportunities, the other two things that are going to be important is that when the Flames are inevitably in stretches, and hopefully it's not for entire periods like it was against Washington, but still that same blueprint of They blocked a ton of shots, and 30 probably is too much on a regular basis. But on that night, they needed to block 30 to find a way to win. And then you've got to find a way to keep it to the outside as well. And the block shots come into that. The defensive positioning comes into that. I mean, Washington had nothing but shot attempts at 5-on-5 in the final 40 minutes of play. I think they had 42 or something like that in the final 40 minutes, and only 9 of them came from the slot when it was all said and done. It might have been even a little bit less than that. And so the Flames did a nice job of, yeah, they were in their zone too much, and they'll readily admit they don't want to be in their zone that much. But when you are, you have to still be intelligent about it, and I thought the Flames were. And so there's going to be a stretch. I can guarantee you Thursday night there's going to be a stretch where Tampa Bay for 6 or 7 minutes feels like they just keep you hemmed in and you can't get out, and all you can do is dump it out, and they're going to come right back at you. But you've got to be okay with that. You've got to be comfortable in that, and you know that it's not going to last forever. But while you're in that stretch, you've got to be willing to block shots. Like Rasmus Anderson blocked 100 last night, and you've got to be able to still keep the team to the outside. And then, yeah, we obviously know that Dustin Wolf will, or Dan Vladar, but I think we all assume Wolf will be able to shut the door too. But I just think not the exact same script, but a similar blueprint. Make good when you're the better team, like the Flames did on Tuesday, and be okay for stretches of time where maybe it feels like you could be running around, but you're actually a whole lot more composed than it might seem, and I think that'll be important too.
So, Pat, are you suggesting that you don't think that Dan Vladar is going to get 15 straight starts?
Probably not.
But Ryan Huska said that was a possibility for either guy.
He did, although Dustin Wolf won his last start and didn't start again. I'm guessing they go back to Wolf.
Yeah, I'm guessing they go back to Wolf too. I'm saying that tongue in cheek, of course, but just trying to pour some fuel on the fire. I know some fans were upset that Wolf didn't get the start, but it worked out pretty well with Vladar between the pipes against the Capitals last night. But yeah, for me, you've just got to stay out of the box, and you know the Flames are going to have to play the right way. We know that they have to play the right way against almost every team in this league, and they're certainly going to have to do that against the Lightning team that beat them 8-3 in their building. But you can't put Nikita Kucherov and company on the power play a bunch of times. That is going to be a recipe for disaster with how your penalty kill has struggled this season. But yeah, they did a really good job making the most of what was a fantastic first period, because remember that first game between the Flames and the Capitals? I actually thought the Flames were the better of the two teams in that game, but they did not take advantage of their opportunities. They obviously did a better job of that. I know that they didn't light the lamp all that often in Washington on Tuesday night, but you know they did enough damage offensively, especially in that first period when they played really well and got rewarded with a couple of goals. So it's the same type of game you want to play against the Lightning, but you probably don't want to take on water the way you did in the second period of last night's game in tomorrow night's game, because as good as the Capitals are offensively, for me at least, the Lightning are even scarier offensively. And I know that statistically speaking that Washington's been the best team in the league as far as goals for per game this season, but the Lightning still terrify me with all the talent they have up front and on the back end with a guy like Hedman as well. So it was, I think, a blueprint that first period last night. You're not going to play for 60 minutes like that against a team like the Lightning, but close to a full 60 minutes. And like the Flames have a chance to win the hockey game, but it's a big game for both teams, guys, because the Lightning right now, they're in an interesting spot. So they're third in the Atlantic Division, only 3 behind the Panthers and only 4 behind the Maple Leafs. But then you look in the rearview mirror and you see the Red Wings are only 4 behind them sitting in that first wild card spot. Yeah. So big game coming up for both teams, and I'm looking forward to it.
For now, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, Willsie. We'll do it all over again on Thursday on a game day. Thank you, pal.
Okay, guys, talk tomorrow.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Cam Hughes. Thanks to Shan Vergy, our outstanding producers this hour. And the Daily Flames Roundtable has been brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.